connected to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz
stuff, you know,
begin!
What are you
I'm
doing,
like,
man?
This is forever, you know.
Yeah, that would drive me nuts if, like, I don't think I could.
She's going.
Down.
Oh, we're rolling.
After Buzz TV.
Welcome to the After Buzz. What's happening?
Where did the intro go?
Right here. Welcome
there
to the After Buzz Beats Until After Show. I am Joe Braswell. As always, I'm joined by my main man, Joe Sanfilippo.
It's nice to be here with you guys. What would have been nicer would have been an intro. So we knew the show had started.
We got it. It's all right. Listen. Yeah. She was hearing it in there.
The lights were on in there, but not in here. Yeah.
Casey.
Hi. Here I am. Welcome, everybody.
And we do not have Nando Velasquez, but we do have my man, Kenny Johnson.
Woo! Yeah.
How you doing?
Ken, I'm doing good.
Good, man. Chill, good to have you, man. Man, I can't tell you. I'm excited to have you. Not only for the baseball tell, but as we talked about.
To arm wrestle. You want to arm wrestle?
No, I'm not arm
You challenged
nobody.
Me earlier. No. What are you talking about?
$1,000
to stay up for 1 second.
Apparently. Kenny,
everyone heard it and saw it.
Kenny Johnson is a pro arm wrestler.
A champion.
Does not get beat ever.
No, I do.
If I stand up with him for how long?
1 second.
I'll give you 1 second.
1 second, he'll give me $1,000. So we may do that later.
So 1,001. So you have to be up before 1,001 is done.
That's it.
I'll count.
I need $1,000.
I mean, how much does it cost to fix your arm, though, when it's all done? I mean, like, this is, are you insured?
I got a thousand bucks,
but my arm.
Now I've already got a bum voice and a. Anyway. That's it. That's all we got. So we got lots to talk about on the show. Crazy, the penultimate episode of the Basement Hotel.
This is the episode before the finale. Only one more episode left.
That's the penultimate.
Yes. Just in case you weren't sure, you know.
I'll be repeating everything Joe says for the rest of the show.
Yes.
That's all right. Good episode. I mean, we're Norman's getting there, man. Norman is really transitioning into Norman.
I was wrong and you were right. Bradley was real. She wasn't a figment of the imagination.
I've got zero evidence in this episode that Bradley's real.
That's totally true. We haven't seen her interact with anybody who's not Norman.
Zero evidence.
Which means there's zero credibility right now because the narrator is BF.
Right. What are you basing this on?
I was thinking about that too. I just didn't want to go down that rabbit hole because I think that what you said last week, Flippo, was actually correct. I think that if she was a figment of Norman's imagination, she would have been a little bit more put together and not, you know, probably, you know, I would think that she would be the Bradley that he knew and slept with for the first time. If you go back to season one, he did lose his virginity to her.
Sure.
That was real. We were not sure if that was real at the time, as I recall.
Exactly, and that ended up being real. So I think that this is real. Like, don't go down that rabbit hole. She's real.
I've said it before. I'll say it again. My man Norman gets laid a lot.
Yeah,
a lot of opportunities.
For a crazy, gangly little, you know, caved-in chest kid
who never leaves his house anymore.
I'm telling you, a lot of opportunities.
I'm thinking about sweaters. I think I'm gonna wear some sweaters and talk more about my mother.
Anyway, I'm sorry to do it. Go ahead, you were saying.
No, that's absolutely fine. I just think that this is was wondering, first of all, I loved this episode. I thought it was great. I loved the interaction with Norma and Bob Paris. I loved your scenes. I thought that they were amazing. I loved Norma and Romero's scene. Holy smoke. I think that was the scene that Carrie was talking about, that hot, steamy scene. Mm-hmm. That was it.
Carrie Aaron told us, we saw her a couple of weeks ago, that they just shot a scene with Nestor and Vera that was really, really hot, but nothing happened. The hottest scene ever shot, right. But nothing happens.
Right.
And that was it. So apparently, right?
Yep. Totally.
All right.
Maybe not.
That was the one. Joe, what do you think of this episode?
You know me. I love this show. I'm in 100%. And of course, Norma, You know, she's okay at the
enough
acting.
Enough already. With the,
would
with
you
the,
stop
with
it?
The, Vera's I love Vera's.
I love Vera.
She's amazing.
She's awesome.
We all love her, but this guy.
Listen, I don't need grief from you people. She's the finest working actress of her generation. I'm excited. It's like watching Babe Ruth. It must have been like watching Babe Ruth back in his day. Mm-hmm. Watching all those home runs. I mean, she's killing it.
No, she's killing it.
I mean, to pretend that she's not, whatever. Come on, she's doing the chicken breathing and the whole thing?
That was good. It was so good.
Oh, so good. And she decked Nestor. I mean, that was, she hit that poor man.
Aside from Vera, anything?
Yeah, love the show. Love the show. And we talked about it. We started talking, Kenny and I, earlier, which we shouldn't have, but just, you bring so much, I empathize so much with Caleb. And I recognize intellectually that I shouldn't. But man, you make that guy work, and it's such a pleasure to watch you guys work every week. You guys do a terrific job with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, Carrie Aaron and Carlton Cuse. If you didn't have great writing, I don't think you could bring as much. And they allow pretty much everything to happen. And I mean, I always say, you know, look for the writing, and the writing's phenomenal. And then, you know, bring the humanity to each character. And, you know, for me, again, coming in as Caleb, the guy who, you know, did what he did to Norma when they were kids, it's a hard thing to overcome. And, you know, I'm glad Carrie and Carlton took a season to try to find, you know, humanity within a person and some sort of redemption. And not to say that you ever need to be forgiven or you have to have people sympathize or like you, but to show that he is a human being and that, you know, it did have an effect on him all those years, instilled to this, you know, point in his life, and he can't really go forward, and he's stuck with a lot of unsettled, you know, things. And it makes it, you know, on screen, it kind of reads that way. And they write so well for it that, you know, you might feel for the guy, or you might hate him, you might like him, you might whatever, but it definitely puts it out there in a very human way.
Absolutely. I mean, you know? And you've worked with some fantastic showrunners and writers, from Sean Ryan to Kurt Sutter to these guys. And yeah, man, I mean, we talk about this all the time, the writing and like the idea that, you know, we have all these people, Norman being at the center, that we know how this ends for Norman, but we're so sympathetic to this guy. We don't want to see it happen to him. And Norma, like we go back and forth from like hating her to laughing at her to being so sympathetic to her. And then now here comes Caleb, you know, the guy who raped his sister, you know, and he comes in and he's on the like this guy, and we all are. You know, when you apologize to Norma that scene a couple episodes ago, mm-hmm. it broke all of our hearts. We're like, oh, this guy, and we did a lot of Kenny Johnson Top Gun acting. Shout out to you,
a lot of them. And for some reason too, we all have been predicting that you were going to die on the show too. For some reason,
it's not over yet. But I'm holding my prediction.
Why? Because of the shield and Sons of Anarchy?
Yes, because you're always dying.
Or because Norman's angry.
How is he going to die? Is it going to be Norman as the Mother Norma persona? Is it going to be, you know, Nestor's character? Is it going to be, you know, and then, you know, Joe's like, I love that we all come to the conclusion that you're just going to die.
Right.
No matter what, we're all convinced.
I'm an easy target. I know. Yeah, my friends are like, you're dead this episode, right? I'm like, really? I'm like, you got no faith in anybody.
Right?
Okay.
I want to go back to work, man.
It's hard. Well, we all predicted. Actually, I early on predicted that you weren't who you said you were. I'm like, I don't trust this guy.
And we already.
I didn't trust that guy either.
I don't know about this guy. I was like, well, I guess maybe he does, but he still didn't do this. And by the end, I was like, I love this guy.
Oh, that's so cool.
And like you said, they really gave you the whole season to really kind of get, you know, to make it a full-fledged human character that was completely fleshed out. And it was neat. You know, in the beginning, when we had the did he or didn't he, because we didn't necessarily trust that what Norma had said was the truth.
Sure.
We were like, well, maybe he did it. Maybe it was in her head. Maybe she's crazy or, you know, whatever. And I love that the choice they made was not. It absolutely happened. And let's have that be a thing, and then let's see what happens going forward, and let's earn it. You and I talked about that earlier. I mean, the writing, they earn their moments. Nothing's ever cheated.
Right.
And boy, oh boy, man. Oh, you guys get there. Just such a pleasure.
So let's go back to this. Bradley finally made it back. So we've been talking about Bradley coming back all season.
Yeah, no.
And she finally made it back. Right. Brad, you know, because dude was like, Bradley's coming back. Bradley's coming back.
when? I know. Right. Last July, you know.
Exactly. So,
even I was like, is she? It's like, what episode are we on?
The very end of episode 8, she shows up.
Yeah.
All right. So good for her. And the question, I don't, you know, I'm not sure. I think we're, but the previews may have betrayed this, but I'm not sure that she's even real yet. You know, and whether or not she is or isn't, I think I love the choice they made in the episode to sort of, you know, put that doubt in our minds. Sure. That, like, is this Norman? Because they have not interacted, like, as we talked about, with anyone else. And, conveniently, when they go back to her house, her parents leave and they come in. I mean, conveniently, you know, everywhere they go, there's no one around. So, I don't know. I'll start with that, Joe. Is she alive or dead?
Listen, I'm going to say this because, you know, obviously, you know, Kenny, you weren't here when we first did this, when we decided that Norman couldn't possibly have gotten laid by Bradley. That was impossible. So, this all had, and so we went through all these great shenanigans and all this twisting and turning to make it no one else saw him go in there, and it was really blue light. I think she's gonna be the first person he kills. I think that's, or the first one he kills.
Yeah,
like, as Norma, in a way that, yeah, he knows that he's doing it.
It's certainly shaping up that way.
So, as I told you earlier, I've actually gone back to season one and I've been rewatching some episodes. And if you guys remember, the episode that the dog Juno dies is the same episode with when Bradley kind of tells Norman they'd slept together. So I think that that dog is very, very symbolic, because last episode, when that dog ran out the door, he was running towards the dog who's dead in a figment, and then all of a sudden Bradley appears.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I think that you're absolutely right, Filippo. I think that Norman has to kill Bradley. And I think that it's because, you know, it's everything, you know, with his murders is very, like, sexually based. Mm-hmm. So, you know, her being the first person that he slept with, kind of the first person that broke his heart, it would make perfect sense. Because watching the whole episode, I couldn't understand. Bradley's and Norman's storyline seemed very disjointed from the rest of the episode. And I think it's because she has a purpose. She needs to die. And I think she's going to die next episode.
Oh, that is depressing as all hell.
Right?
She has a purpose. She needs to die.
She does.
Your death.
No, I mean, I agree with you 1,000% on that one. I do. I think that, unfortunately, I do agree with you. I think that, like, yeah, there's a bookend thing to, like, when we see her first and when we may or may not see her last. Mm-hmm. The guilt, we talked about what triggers Norman. Is it the, you know, being sexually aroused? Is it Norma? And, like, we know now it's manifesting itself into this sort of guilt, right? Mm-hmm. It's twofold. It's like, I'm attracted to this woman. I can't be attracted to this woman because she's dirty or a whore or whatever it is. Oh, and I can't betray my mother. Like, she's my only one, so I can't actually have sex with this one when I really want her.
And what's that like when you're making out with a hot girl and you keep seeing your mother in the blue dress in the corner?
Yeah, like, not sexy. Not sexy.
And they made such an effort to actually tell the audience that the Mother Norma persona was fake, because they kept cutting to the shots where it was just Norman.
Yeah.
So I think they would have done something similar if Bradley wasn't
real. Well, look, we've also got the signifier now. When we see Norma in that dress, you know,
he stole the dress, so I mean, she can't wear it because he's creeping out on it.
Yeah, so the blue dress is like that's Mother Norma. So there's no, I think we're through the looking glass in terms of, like, is this really Norma or Norma at this point? So so I don't know. We'll see where this goes.
This is what you guys talk about.
All day long.
I could give you answers.
No, I don't want answers.
I'm like, this is, like, really weird.
You're like, this is easy. Like, boom.
Here, you guys are reading the next.
No, I love the script.
This is awesome.
We just thought, yeah, when Nestor was here, well, Nestor's been here a few times, but he was here for the preview of of the episode. So we're, like, asking all these questions. He's just sitting there like, wow,
yeah, what?
No. So we've learned now to stop asking questions, because I'd be like, what's going to happen? Right? Tell me.
Like, I'm just looking neutrally out there right now. Like, I know nothing. I'm not giving away anything.
let's get to the rest of the episode, and then we can get into some stuff with Kenny. I want to talk about Norma's flipping out, and her confrontation with Bob. Her confrontation with Norman and her confrontation with Sheriff Romero. Let's start with her and Bob. She goes to play Bob and visit Dua.
Oh, I think the acting in that scene was so good. And he said something really important. He goes, I know that you think I'm the bad guy, but you are way worse than me.
Kevin Ram's killing the game, man.
He's so good.
And he's so, you know, slightly manipulative and really, like, it was such a good scene. And he's absolutely right. Like, any guy that crosses paths with Norma inevitably has an awful ending. You know, you had the deputy in season one, and then you had the you know, Dr. McFeelgood. What was his name?
Finnegan.
Yeah, Dr. McSensitive, right?
Was that Dr. McSensitive, that was it.
Dr. McFeelgood?
I don't know.
Dr. McFeelgood was somebody I hung out with in high school.
Yes.
This stuff was the bomb.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I think that what's weird about this, all the time we think about this inverse world because we're looking at things from the point of view of like Norman and Norma out. Mm-hmm. So because we're in the Norman Norma world, and we're in their insular world of them, and we're invested in them, invested in Caleb and Dylan. For the rest of the world, even for us as a viewer, it looks like there are a bunch of crazies out there. There are a bunch of drug dealers. There are a bunch of craziest. But just for one second, let's flip that world around, and if we were looking at the world and looking in at Norma and Norman, we'd be like, these guys are all nuts. Well, she's nuts, he's nuts, these weird. So maybe maybe Bob's right.
Bob's not right. I mean, obviously, with the hindsight being 2020, we know Norman's probably going to go on to murder a whole bunch of women. Yes, we can probably say that arguably. But at this point, no, he's not right. He murdered two women. He tortured Dr. McSensitive. He's not a nice boy at all. And Norma has never tortured anyone. She's never killed anyone outright for just because they could have known. Something.
Yes, she has.
She killed that guy. Who
raped her?
Who raped her?
Yeah.
But did anybody rape him? Nobody raped Bob. Did I miss something? Yeah, Bob was not raped.
I don't know. No. Well, who knows what happened to the Arcanum Club?
What I loved it. Yeah, the Arcanum Club is crazy.
Yeah. Who knows what happened there? I don't know.
You know. You know what I liked about that scene, though? I loved when she came there and she's like, you can see in her head, she's so good. And the writing is so good. She's like, if I just tell him it's cool, he's going to see that that's an easier deal and we're going to be good. It's going to be good. And he's like, you just see him, the predator in him, just go for the kill. He's like, no, I'm going to take everything. And I love that. I love that. There's no get out of jail free card. There's no, we're cool now. Nah, he's very predatory. He's like, no, you're weak now? Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to get you all the way. Mm-hmm. I thought that was great.
Yeah. So, I mean, Bob very much, flipped the script on her, basically said, you're not in control. Too late for that. I may or may not out your son. Can't promise you that. But mm-hmm. you sure as hell going to give me the flash drive. We'll start with that. Mm-hmm. So that was very cool, very gangster. As gangster as Bob Harris has been. Like, he was super gangster. Like, because he's been like, because you know he's like this guy, he's this bad guy, maybe kingpin type. But the way he plays it is so like, hey man, I'm just a guy at the club.
I'm just a president. A long bike ride.
I'm going for my 10 speed. What's going on? That was the first time. Even when he tortured, Dr.
McSensitive.
Dr. McSensitive, he was still like, look, buddy. You know, but this is the first time we saw him get kind of gangster like. I don't, you know, that was really cool. So
we're talking about that, man. You put my hands behind my back and you handcuff me. I don't care what kind of doctor. I'll talk about anything you want. You don't even need to staple my foot.
Yeah,
if it's clear this is gonna happen, it's all good. We'll talk.
Just show me the nail gun. So then Norma goes and talks to a very key confrontation with Norman. I can't remember if Norman confronts her or she confronts it. Oh, that's right. She's downstairs.
Yeah, she's tossing all the stuff.
She's tossing all this taxidermy crap because it looks bad. My man's down there, carving up dogs and owls. Can't possibly look good. So she's wrapping it up and he's very upset about it. My work, mother, my work.
It's very important.
And this is like when they're finally, because it's been kind of under the surface with them that they kind of talked around the fact that Norman's got an issue or something, some bad things have been happening, talking around it, but they went at it. Like, look, man, like, people know about you. This doesn't look good. Like, get this shit out of here. And Norman didn't like that, right?
Yeah, well, what are you going to do when you get rid of his hobby of taxidermy? Like, what's he going to do then? He's going to have to start killing people.
Tax Bradley is what's going to happen.
Yeah. No, that was not good.
Damn it.
Tax of Bradley, is that what you just said?
He didn't like that one. Write it down. It was no good.
Yeah. But we also saw Norman really, we've seen this a couple times, the progression of Norman getting more and more sort of aggressive, and he really got in her grill. Yeah. Like, he really got in her grill and was like, actually. Oh, yeah. And then also, not just physically, but intellectually, like, you know, this is bad for you too, mother. Mm-hmm. How sick you look.
And he even grabbed the scalpel? Oh, yeah.
That
was scary. Yeah. That was
she
scary.
Froze on that one.
She definitely went cold and again played excellently by Vera because it was like you saw the tear in her eyes like, oh. Because every moment, like, you know, this is my son, it's Norman, I'm protecting him, or I got this guy, he's no problem. That moment, she's like, oh, this guy really might kill me. You know, so
oh damn,
like yeah, he's crazy. So that happened. I thought that was a very key scene in establishing, you know, Norman. Because again, we talked about this before, from season one to at least now, season one Norman, it's like this guy couldn't, you know, to quote Psycho, this guy couldn't hurt him a fly. You know, yeah. This guy couldn't hurt anybody. Right. He was so sweet. You know, Freddie Highmore from, you know, from seasons one and two, and now I'm like, I'm afraid of Freddie Highmore. Like he's scary.
And
so.
I think that he's affecting the characters around him too, because in this season, this is the first season that we really do see Norma fear as well, which has got to be a really interesting playoff. She's still protecting him, but now she's fearing him.
Right.
So
then let's talk about this last confrontation with Norman and Romero. We're finally in they meet initially, and they have a conversation. She kind of storms into it. She's done many times before. Storms into the office and embarrasses him by screaming all kind of BS around. You know?
I love that line. What are you going to act like a third grade girl now? Yeah. No,
yeah. But like, how many times has Norma come to the station and just put all his business in the street?
Oh, okay.
She just comes. Like, when you see her, like, Romero, here's a note to Romero. When you see Norma, let her in. Yeah. Right? Like, do not say, stay out there, Norma. She's like, okay. Why?
This is one of the things I absolutely love about the character that they've created for her, because it's going to sound terrible. My mother's nuts. I grew up with a crazed mother. For a solid 12 years, she went crazy. And
I like her.
That behavior is so real. If you're a little unhinged, or if you don't have those barriers anymore, you will do that stuff. And that is real.
Yeah.
That will happen. And it's crazy, because when there's that kind of force coming at you, it takes you back. Like, and you see people in positions of power, like the sheriff, just kind of like, I don't know what to do with you for a hot second. Like, over here, we can't do this. There's nothing I can.
Yeah,
because it's so unexpected. It's so out of the ordinary.
That's at least a third time.
Oh yeah,
a fourth time when they mentioned that exact same shot of Norma like leaning in and Romero calling with a cup of coffee and she's like, "Get in here." You
know? That one deputy goes out the door. You know he's going to get cheered out later on. What'd you open the door for?
So she, confronts her in there, and he's really. What's cool about this is, you know, look, Romero's hurt. Like, he's really hurt. I mean, so you see him sort of like not jilted lover, but really it's beyond that. And and in the scene later, we get a better sense that it's not just that. It's not just Norma. It's everything. Like, it's the attrition of, like, from his father to, like, the town to all these people. And now Norma, it's like the one good thing in Norma is, like, screw everybody. Yeah. And so that was, like, his meltdown. And then Norma had her sort of multi-layered meltdown on top of that. That was a fantastic scene. That's like, it's like one of my favorite scenes of the series, actually.
Yeah.
The Norman Romero showdown. Yeah. Almost make out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on that, Dua?
That was, I thought it was great that she broke into his house. I mean, yes. I thought that was.
I know, right?
I thought that was absolutely awesome. And I think one of the genius things that they do in this show, and something that Cary Aaron said, is that they never answer any questions in absolutes. Right. So when he has her up against the wall in that really, you know, intense moment, and he's like, "Why don't you tell me the truth?" And she's like, "I did it." And you're like, "Well, maybe she could have done it." Because the only way that we know that she didn't do it is because she told Dylan that Norman did it. So we really don't know. And keeping those doors open makes it so exciting to watch.
Well, which is what Cary said was the tone of the book. So the book Psycho does a lot of that, where it's like you don't really, all these people are in this, we don't really get the exact answer. There's a lot of, like, sort of left out there. And so, see, even this, it's like, did you kill him? You know, did she kill him? I don't know. Did Norman do it? We never get an answer. I want answers. It's like Lost. Give me some answers. Carlton.
It's almost like the same people. It's weird.
I don't know, but
Well, he's a huge Twin Peaks fan. And, you know, ambiguity is like a huge thing. And you go into this world of, you know, mystery and secrets, and I think it's kind of fun to not know.
Yeah,
you don't want to nail anything directly on the head, and it just, you know, like, keeps you guys going on like this for a while. I'm like, this is wild,
and
man.
It's not just us. No. It's all of these guys out here.
No, I mean, I love it.
On iTunes and YouTube, and then they're all going
nuts. I love it. It's genius writing, man.
For us, it's great, because it's like we're living in this, I think you call it, what do you call it, the post-secondary golden age? I don't know. For me, it's the golden age of television. I think the best acting going on right now is happening on TV. I think the best writing is happening on TV.
The golden age of television started, this man was a part of the original golden age back in 2002. Back in 2002 with The Shield.
Yep.
And Sopranos and The Shield and all this stuff back then. That's the first era. And then that, and then the second golden age, which is kind of now, and I feel like it's all dying with the end of Mad Men, and that stuff is dying, and we're into a world where we just have great television like we do now. That was my whole point.
But what was wonderful about it is we can actually talk. Well, you can talk about TV now the way we used to talk about plays back in college. Like you can talk about the symbolism that's going on in TV.
Right.
You can, like for example, we talked to Carrie about the car, like Norma's car. She is wearing all of the pain that Norma has gone through. Everything never gets fixed, never gets fixed,
right.
never gets fixed.
Right.
She turns in the car, gets the Mustang, full-blown
right.
personality swap. And I think the same thing is true with your character. I mean, you kept wearing all the hurt that happened to you this season. You got your hand, you got your head, you got the beat up, you got the whole thing, and it was all on you.
Right, right.
And I love one of the things I love about this show is, like, those are not temporary things. They continue episode to episode, you know?
Right.
I love that.
Well, let's get into some Caleb and Dylan and transition into Kenny and the character Caleb, because a lot happened with, first let's talk about last week, which we talked about, but since he's here, you know, the gun run, as we all knew, didn't go so well.
Yeah.
No.
I don't think anyone in the entire universe of Bates Motel thought that gun run was going to go well.
and even Caleb knew that it wasn't going to go well because he hid that gun in down underneath in the truck. Like he knew exactly. Like, he's like, this ain't my first rodeo.
Right, right.
So that went bad. Caleb took care of it. And then Caleb and Dylan took care of it, by the way. And then they came back and Caleb's pissed. Rightfully so. And I love the way it's played, how protective that your character is of Dylan. And, like, his single solitary motivation is, like, I do want to make this right with this kid.
Right.
I do have a relationship with this kid. If anyone hurts this kid, I'm gonna F them up.
Right.
And we saw that when you go to, that was your motivation going to Chick. Almost, you want the money too, but it's like, what did you do to my son? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I've got a little girl who's turning 6, and I know those feelings. And yeah. I know, like, if I have an adult in a grocery store turn and hit her in the head accidentally and walks away, I mean, my blood boils, yeah. and I feel so protective. And yeah, I mean, the thing is like, this is Caleb's son. Yeah. I mean, Yeah, he would basically, he's done wrong in his life, and there's nothing really that maybe is going to right what he did wrong.
Right.
So to put himself out there like that to make sure nothing happens to his son is like kind of who he is. He's
yeah.
like, you know, yeah, yeah. If that makes sense. Yeah.
Can I ask you a question? When you first came on, did you guys decide in advance? How did you approach it? Did you approach it like I have goals as a character, like I want to get, or did you kind of come in like, hey, I'm going to take whatever you guys are willing to give me. I just want to be.
Well, it was like I was a huge fan of the show the first season, and I didn't, you know, I obviously was in between shows, and I was kind of thinking in my head, okay, what would I like to do next? And my wife and I watched this like it was crack, you know, every week.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my god, I can't wait till next week. This is like the best show. And then I'm thinking in my head, what could I do on the show? And I'm like, well, I can't play sheriff. They've already had like a younger, good looking guy. He got off. I'm like, well, I could play her brother. And I'm like, why would she have a brother? I'm like, that was never introduced like in the movie. So I go, no, it's kind of, you know, ridiculous. And I got a phone call one day at, you know, basically from Lady Alex Cunningham, who was writing that third episode of Caleb coming in. And she goes, look, I wrote this thing with you in mind. I'm going to pitch you to, you know, Carlton and Carrie, and we'll see where this goes. But she goes, I think it's great. It's to play the brother. And I'm like, oh, awesome. But for some reason in my head, I didn't realize it was the brother that had raped her. I had no idea. I just thought I was the brother.
Well, so
I get a
good one.
4 days later, I get a call from Carrie saying, you know, I would love for you to come on the show and play Caleb.
Oh, so you didn't audition. It was a straight offer.
Yeah, it was an offer. And she goes, she says, you know, it's you know, the brother, and you raped Norma. I'm like, what? And then she goes, and your son is Dylan, but nobody can. And I'm like, what? And I started jumping up and down. I remember I got chills going through my body because I thought, this is genius, man. It's so wrong, but I thought it's so awesome, dude. It was really awesome. So basically, I came on for 2 episodes plus like one little intro when I first came in, say I'm looking for my sister Norma Bates, and that was like the first intro, and then 2 episodes and I was out, and that was all anybody had discussed. And over the season, apparently, they just thought this was unfinished. You know, we dropped a bombshell, and how could we really not do anything with it? So they figured out, you know, how can we flush it out? So that's what they did. They brought it in. And my whole thinking was, okay, how do you approach a character like that that, you know, they say has, you know, raped his sister? And I just went back to, okay, just pretend for me, like, you know, your best friends, you know, maybe something happened when you were younger because you only had each other and you were in a very, you know, dysfunctional environment, you know, and growing up in Connecticut, I had a friend who had a dad who ended up being that guy that would do things to her, and she had a mom who was actually crazy that ended up in a mental institution. So I kind of was around and witnessed that energy, and I thought, this is just, you know, this is real stuff that actually happens, and try to apply it instead of thinking that it's a guy that did this aggressive event, you know, one day when he was a teenager, that, you know, I just have my own backstory, right, and how they had done, you know, for me, things had happened way prior to that, but it was the moment that she said, this is wrong, we can't do this anymore, where he couldn't accept that. And then once he went beyond that, that's the thing that he, you know, basically, you know, you know, that was the rape, and that's what's on. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, because that is the explanation that sort of allows us to have the window into, like, understanding. First, you have to understand that this was the world that they lived in. This is how they were. It's a piece of a world, and they only had each other. And then once you understand that world, then you can sort of make the leap. Okay, well, they really cared about her, and this is what happened. And so, as you described as your backstory, how much of that did you share with Carrie and the writers, how did that chicken egg work? Did they say, like, this is what we're thinking, and you're like, this is how I feel it? How'd it go?
Carrie basically laid it out there, and then I told her, okay, this is where I'm coming from, and I wrote, you know, all my stuff down, and she goes, okay, that's great, but, you know, some of this doesn't work and can't work, and you know, but this is really good insight, and let's play in that world. And so, you know, when he apologizes and he says, yeah, I did this, I fell in love, we only had each other, it was really a dysfunctional, you know, environment that they lived in, that she was all I had, she was my world, and he couldn't see right from wrong, or even that they weren't brothers. I mean, you know, they were one to him, and so you know,
that's
back to your question, I kind of lost it.
No, that's good.
If that also, that's really insightful, because, you know, Norma's relationship with Norman, a lot of your relationship with Norma or Caleb's relationship with Norma will cross over into her relationship with her sons. So that's, you know, that is pivotal, knowing all of that, and, you know.
But again, that's my background. I'm not saying that is what happened or that's what Carrie says, but it's never really fully explained. He didn't go, yeah. You know what I mean? She still leaves it a little, you know.
Open, never any absolute answers like we were talking about.
I want to ask you about the specific scene too. Like, there's like three or four really key scenes with Caleb and all in the family, the whole Bates family. But one is you cracking your head off the roof and then coming down, and then Dylan sort of, like, you know, sewing you up and having that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, tell me a little about that scene, because in our head, you know, we talked about that. It was like a literal personification of sort of closing the wounds of, like, and you were sort of explaining what happened.
Right.
And I mean, like how, tell me about that scene. How much of that was on the page in terms of, like, you know, this is what the symbolism of this is, and how much, like, did you guys kind of work out on the day?
I think a lot. I mean, you know, it was actually probably a page more dialogue written that got cut down and edited down to make it what it was. But, you know, it's like, he's drunk. He just, you know, like you said, he, you know, had a concussion. He got cut open, and he really wants to say, I'm sorry. He doesn't want to, again, make it an excuse. He doesn't want to try to, you know, win or manipulate anybody in any direction. He's just sharing from his heart this pain in this moment, and he's got to get it out to his son, you know, whether it heals anything or not, but it's a start. And so, you know, it was his way of, I mean, dude, it was the most uncomfortable scene I've ever done in my life.
Wow. It was a powerful scene.
It was a great scene. That is the scene that turned me. I went from, you know, not liking the character of Caleb to really sympathizing, mm-hmm. and it was that scene.
Yeah, that turned all of us too. That turned me too. I was like, Caleb's my guy.
It was a great ride. Carrie, you know, again, great, phenomenal writing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The writing was there. And just, you know, you plan a lot of underlying stuff, I think, to be able to make those words come to life. So, you know, anyways.
Can you, I have a question, because that scene when you were actually on the farmhouse that you're building and you fall, was that you or was that a stunt double, or how did that...
Well, it looked very brutal.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say it wasn't.
I jumped off like 20 times, but I had a harness on, so they stopped me right before the ground.
Oh,
and, they took one stunt guy who was an awesome dude, and he came in for one take, and that's all it was. And they had to, you know, he was out to the hospital for a few days.
Oh, really?
That was a crazy hit.
It was a brutal
hit. Bam.
Pretty gnarly. I mean, yeah, it was annoying. Yeah. It was, you know. This guy, it's a one take. It was brutal because it was like 32 degrees, and that ground was like cement.
Yeah,
and he just happened to miss the table a little bit, and it didn't slow his fall, and kind of I think he hit head and shoulders first. So
that wasn't Nestor's episode, was it? That wasn't five.
No.
Okay. Nestor's like, give me one more take.
That was four.
Let's get to into this, and then we don't want to jump back and ask some more questions. But I also want to jump back to Romero. So Romero in his sort of inks and trying to get this thing done. He has that wonderful confrontation with the DEA officer
Liz Babbitt.
Yeah,
she was not a nice person.
No, I think she was. I think she was nice. She's got his number.
Nor does Nestor ever back down, though.
No. Yeah.
Dude,
not at all.
He's in control of every scene, dude. He's so strong.
He's very...
I'm like, when is he going to break, dude? He's just, like, stealth, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, the one time we see him close to breaking is him and Norma. But other than that, like, it feels like, he's in complete control. Like, this DA, like, how does this happen?
Mm-hmm. And he's like, is there a question there?
Right? I'm like, no.
Something you
want to ask me? I do like that. So then, anyways, we get this climactic scene. Oh, I don't want to gloss over Dylan and Emma and Emma's dad.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, that was a cool. Dylan finally got to fulfill his thing. He drops the 50 grand off, and he has that cool conversation with the dad.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was just very sort of romantic and well played.
Listen, right? that 50 grand though, that's looming, because that is chick is not going to let that go. That's going to be some ish. Chick is not going to walk away from that 50K, and you didn't kill him, so I'm a little concerned.
But Chick's face is really messed up. I think he's going to need to recover.
No, his eye fell.
Chick's not going to go after a poor cystic fibrosis written Emma.
I'm not worried about Emma. I'm more worried about Dylan.
Dylan.
But I love that the comedy that they play when they have, you know, you're reminded that Dylan is standing at the motel and he's been gone in the car for 72 hours, as he says, but he looks at the pit and he's like, what is this? I love that, like, comedy moment.
Yeah. It's clearly not a pool.
Of course, like, Emma, the heart of the show, is like, it's a pool. Your mom wanted to surprise you.
That's what I love. Every character has had that response. Like, all the younger people are like, we were put in a pool. And all the older people are like, the hell you are.
It's 27 feet deep.
And the dirt pile is like 15 feet high.
Do you know how pools work?
Yeah.
that brings to the final end scene there. We get a real sense of what's going on with Norman. You know, he has that confrontation / wonderful moment. God, Alexi, wonderful moment with Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
I thought for a moment that Bradley was going to just, you know, take the whole bottle. These help me sleep, you know, the pills.
Mm-hmm.
But I also realize it's probably her just sort of like, you know, getting relaxing.
Yeah. Getting sedated.
Bradley, by the way.
And then what does she do? Then she goes to seduce Norman. So she takes a pilly pill before she goes after Norman.
Yes.
Yeah.
I will say Bradley, not ugly.
Now you're saying there's nothing wrong there?
Nothing wrong with that lady.
Mm.
I'll say that.
It's almost like they did that on purpose.
As we talked about, Norma shows up. You know, which is not a good thing to have happen while you're trying to get your thing done. And
it's like the Seinfeld episode when George is trying to have sex and that little doll keeps showing up.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. You know what I mean? It's exactly what I thought. I'm like, oh, really? Mom's that's like, so watch it, talking to me? This is weird.
And one thing they've done now, I think they made the choice too, what I've noticed is we're now seeing, I think this is the first time this has happened. When Norman's in his blackouts and he's seeing the mother Norma or the dog, like we as the audience see it what he sees. Mm-hmm. Today was the first time we as the audience actually saw for what it was.
Yeah.
So he's actually out talking to nobody. We as the audience actually saw him like talking to no one. Then we the audience saw him walking up the stairs with no one. Let's go, mother.
Well, I think they're making it. I think there seems it seems to me they're going out of their way to make it a little more clear. Because I would imagine that probably somebody watched the because the episode last week and 2 weeks ago we've seen the dog the dog in and out before.
Right.
So, I mean, if you're paying real close attention, you may have gotten it. But it now that I think they're kind of...
Well, I don't think anything on the show is done by accident or, like, by course corrected. I think that like, there's the choice to, like, if it's... I feel like if we're seeing it, they want us to see it. If we're not seeing it, they don't want us to see it. I feel like now what they're saying is we've laid this world out here enough. Norman has completely, to us audience, Norman has completely made the transition over. Mm-hmm. So now that you guys all know that Norman has made the transition, now we can have these wonderful scenes where he's talking to no one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, they're just like lifting your perspective and they're taking it back a bit.
Right.
To really.
So we'll see. And he's off Caleb shows up and as Norma's trying to fill the pool back up, it'll take her a couple minutes just to dump the dirt back in there. But she's having her meltdown and Caleb comes up and then, you know, says he's leaving, dropping off the guitar, but then tells her, you know, like breaks it down and something that Norma's heard before, your son thinks he's you. Yeah. I'm just saying. Like, that's weird. Right.
I love their first exchange, and you kind of got that little like brother sister dynamic when he's like, "What's wrong with you?"
Wrong?
And then she looks at his face.
Yeah.
And his face is all messed up.
You don't ask how long.
Right. Sounds reasonable.
Fair enough. Yeah. It was a great moment.
You as Caleb has really got a clear picture of what's going on. Like, Norman, he's clearly off his rocker. You've had multiple confrontations with Norman. Like, he jumped on top of him at the end, he jumped on top of Dylan.
Dylan, yeah, yeah.
They came to the hotel room.
I
enjoyed you guys at the Last Supper, by the way, the dinner, when he was...
Yeah.
Now, was that scripted, or did you guys...
Yeah, no, it was all scripted.
The chair
thing we came up with on the day, and the you know, clanging bottles where he pulled it away. That was all stuff that we just did.
Little stuff.
Just out of our characters. Yeah. All the stare downs, the fact that I actually ended up next to him was all by accident and kind of, you know, when we were trying to map it out. And it was good. He's so good. He's so good, and she's so good.
Well, you know, it was all of you guys because it was great because you played your status so perfectly, and it allows. I mean, it's testament to the whole crew because you guys all played the status just right, which allowed those moments to happen.
Right.
You know, where you're just pure contrition and pure wanting to be a part, and you know, the funny thing is. Of all the people on the show, you're the most competent and you're the most physically powerful, and yet you just I'm not doing it. And that allows Norman that room to take those shots at you,
which
worked like gangbusters. Little things.
This seems to be. This is what I'll ask you. Then we'll transition to some kiddie stuff. Like, this seems to be sort of what you're really, 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 really good at. Like this perfect mix of like the super badass tough guy. But there's a level of sensitivity there that, you know, that you've like, oh, this guy's a real sensitive guy, but he might whoop your ass or kill you, but he's still a really sensitive guy.
Feel so bad about it.
So, I mean, that balance, I mean, those characters you play very, very well, and I think Caleb's no different from that. Is that something that's closer to kind of how you are as a guy, or is that sort of like how you're able to get into these guys?
Hey, you really want to know who I am?
We're not drinking, right?
That's okay. That's cool.
You're not taping any of this, right?
No.
you try to play off as much real life as you can, and you know, I mean, we all don't come from perfect backgrounds or parents or whatever. So you know, I definitely. I came from a strange upbringing myself a little bit and had a lot of, you know, things that stick with you a lifetime and that you, you work your entire life to overcome, and you do everything you can to be the best person you can, but sometimes those things are just still in you, you know, in a cellular level. So great writing or situations like this sometimes just give you an opportunity to tap into that, along with, like I say, it's great writing and just who you are as a person. And sometimes the mix comes together and it comes out. It works, you know, yeah. And Caleb, it works. Yeah, Kozik, it worked. It worked with Lem and the Shield, yep. And you know. So yeah, I don't know. I mean,
no, that's the answer. Well, speaking of the Shield, because I've got it, I might probably be the number one Shield fan of all
you
time.
You might be. Right?
So
I mean, how like many I said, years I've listened to you rave about this show?
I'm super. No, I'm yeah. Like, this is my it's a, kind of a starstruck moment for me actually right now. With Officer Curtis Leminski. So let me tell you. So how
you're
did you,
a huge guy. you're fearless.
How did you come to that role? I mean, this is back in 2002. I mean, no one knew that would be the phenomenon that it would at the time. But like when the show was sort of pitched and Sean Ryan, those guys came up with the show and they brought it to you. Like, how was it brought to you and what did you think of it at the time?
It was like, it was a show called The Barn at the time and it was going around and everybody was like, this is like the best script. You got to read it. And you know, again, it was like fearless and kind of really out there. And I thought, well, who's really going to make this? And they're like, well, there's a show called FX that nobody had really heard of. And they had like Son of the Beach on. And that was like the only show. And it was a brand new show run by Kevin Riley, Peter Liguori, and a bunch of guys. And you know, they brought this in and made two pilots, you know, and ended up casting Chiklis as Vic Mackey and Walton Goggins and myself and a bunch of, you know, really, really cool people and made this pilot. And basically, we were the little engine that could. You know, we didn't know. We were in a studio and it was pretty much deserted, just on the street shooting this pretty insane, you know, fun dialogue. And everybody bonded and like we were like brothers, like for life from the beginning. Everybody on that show was like this. And we just, it was just kind of effortless and they casted it perfect. And we shot it and we didn't know if it would even get picked up, you know, and they kind of went out on a limb and FX took it. And again, we thought, is anyone really going to watch it or are they going to like it? And, it broke like all the ratings, like, you know, right away, and then kind of set the trend for cable TV from that point on.
For sure, I mean that started the trend. I think that and then the moment where in the pilot, I think where you know my buddy Ray Pratt and I, watching that moment in the pilot, when he pulls a gun,
turn and goes boom,
and shoots, you're like, like that was the moment when you're like, what is this show?
Face of black.
What is happening? So I'll fast forward. I mean, because this is Baseball Town and not the Shield. I know I'm excited.
Yeah.
This is Baseball Town, not the Shield. So, but I do have to ask you about
Brad's nerd now.
I'm nerd now.
I do have to ask you about, you know, I mean, spoiler alert for those of you who haven't seen the Shield in the 14-year-old show. But when Lem dies, the death of Lem was actually probably another one of the most heartbreaking things and shocking things that I've seen on television. And Walton and the whole thing, like, you know, when you're in the car and the grenade. Yeah. I mean, it was like, it was so shocking. I mean, because we're in a time where, you know, main characters weren't dying on TV like that. Like, you know, now main characters die all the time. It's like, that's what we do in TV in the post-Golden Age, of secondary TV, whatever you call it.
Post-secondary. you made it up, not me.
So I thought you were talking about like the 70s or something. I didn't realize 2000. I'm like, what?
Not only did you make this up, it came out. Like it was a thing.
I didn't make it up. Alan Sepinwall, baby. Anyway,
whatever.
So talk to me about that, the reaction to that. I mean, how far into season did you know at the beginning of the season that Lem was going to go? What did you know?
Sean had approached me, God, right when I got back from getting married in Maui. Man. So it was like a week and a half after, and I had no idea it was gonna come up. And he goes, "Look, I have this thing in mind that he goes, we're gonna kill your character and." And it's going to be done by one of your own guys. And, you know, we don't know which one yet. Probably it's going to be Walton. And it's going to be kind of the beginning of the end for us. It's going to be, he says, because I want to end this in 7. It will trigger off the spiral to no return. And he goes, he says, you know, but I don't want to do it before it's earned. And he goes, you know, I'll let you know. But I think in about 4 months is when we're going to do it at the end of season 5. And he goes, just wanted you to know. And he goes, but season 6, he goes, just because of you know, the people and the love we have and FX and everything like that, you know, they were basically going to pay me for season six not being there.
Oh, wow. That's
as cool. a way of That's saying, cool. like, we're not doing this, and I don't want you to go out thinking, you know. So anyways, it was really cool. Awesome, you know, that was really cool. But, yeah, I mean, the thing with Walton was I knew for about 4 months, and I was promised, you know, I had to promise Sean not to tell anybody. So, nobody knew for a long time.
Wow.
And then Walton started, like, he and I had become best friends. We did Major League 3 together, and we had roomed in South Carolina, and we'd been, like, really tight. So when we got the show together, we're like, oh, this is, like, phenomenal. So the fact that it was going to be done by, like, my best friend was even, you know, it was a tough one, but it worked. It was really powerful, and you know, he kept, like, seeing something was wrong throughout the season, going, buddy, something's going on. What's what? He's like, is it with Kathleen? Is it with you? You know, he's like, and I'm like, dude, just don't ask me. And then finally one day he says, it's the show, and then he just said, you know, he swore, and he started crying.
Oh,
I didn't.
Man.
I just looked away. He goes, "Okay, just nod to me, yes or no." And I just fucking wouldn't look at him, and he just bust broke down, got in his car, drove away. I called him. I said, "Listen, just don't say a word." I go, because Sean doesn't want anyone to know. And then you know, the script came out, and it was what it was. And Sean said, "Just for the integrity of what we're trying to do, please, and for, you know, Kenny's death, don't say anything." So.
Right.
Everyone was like, you know, knew someone's gonna die, but I had done so many interviews, and they're like, so who is it? Kenny, is it this guy? I go, well, you know, and I was hinting at a lot of other people, but no one expected it was me.
Because it felt like the emotion on the set was real. Like, people were really, it looked like that's really good acting, and people were really upset.
Well, I think people forget, like, it is a family, and you guys are spending more time on the set with these folks than you're spending with your family, and it's not even close.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you're doing 14, 15-hour days, you know, 7 days a week sometimes when the schedule gets crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that most folks forget that this is really, and when you die off a show, your job is over.
Yeah.
You know, so not only are you're no longer part of this family, your job is ending. I mean, you know, we all watch TV and we take it for what it is, but it's hard to remember just how deep that gets.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice that we get a little insight though.
That's it. Also, well, thank you for that, man, because we gotta get out of here soon, but thank you for that. I'll go another hour on S.H.I.E.L.D., but I'll do that another time.
We're probably on the air right now. She cut us like 10 minutes ago. We're just talking.
We didn't know when we started. We didn't know
But it's cool that you got to work back with Kurt, you know, and the Sons of Anarchy, that was cool, and now the Bates thing is fantastic, and I really look forward to you. Hopefully you don't die too soon. Hopefully you can hang around.
I gotta say this too, though, about this cast, is like, these guys, you know, these guys are the most, like with the S.H.I.E.L.D., everybody was egoless and just full of love, you know, and it's funny to play these characters, because in real life, Norma is the nicest, Vera is the nicest person. Freddie is the nicest guy. I mean, these guys are everybody. Dylan is the nicest guy. And then they jump into even that dinner scene you're talking about. I'm like, okay, how are we going to do this? Because, you know, in real life, it's like us. And then all of a sudden, everyone, when they dive into their characters, like you say, things come out and the moments happen, and they're just phenomenal actors, and it's, I'm really blessed to be there with them.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
Let's get predictions and get out of here. Predictions?
There's supposed to be a draft.
There it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now,
what's that?
You're after Buzz.
It's our predictions for the season finale.
I don't think you're allowed to do this. I think the network will get really
mad. No, I won't give you any. Yet.
Joe Flippo, what do you think? We have one.
Like I said, shut up. I think that I think that Bradley is going to be the first gal that Norman kills in a way that he's kind of aware of. I think he's going to be fully present and accounted for, and I think it's going to be a really crazy scene.
Okay,
that's all I got.
I agree with that. I mentioned that earlier. I totally agree with that. And then I also think that something in a roundabout way, I think that Bob Paris, I think that has to be over. I think that was, you know, season three, that they're going to tell that story, and it has to be over. So something's going to happen there. He's either going to die or he's going to go away.
Yeah. The DEA is going to come and shut his ass down.
Yeah. I don't think Bob is going to be back for season four. I think that I don't want to say this. I think that Caleb is going to be... I think that you'll probably be in, like, half of season four, but then you're going to be gone forever.
You're still trying to kill Caleb.
Well, it's just...
He's standing. He's sitting right next to you.
It's
plugging my ears.
That's him. It's him.
But I mean, this is. I just cannot wait. I'm so sad. I feel like this went by so quickly.
I know. Yeah, I'm still waiting for the season to start. How is this possible?
My prediction is. I think. Yeah, I agree. I think the whole the DEA is going to shut all the town down again, and we'll have to have another. You know, someone else has a sort of leave a vacant hole in that town again. Mm-hmm. And I think Chick's the guy. I think there's something to Chick coming in and sort of being the new big bad, if you will, of season four.
New crazy guy up on the mountain.
Caleb in, and then Dylan. I think that's where that's going. So Chick is sort of going to emerge as the new bad guy.
That 50 grand isn't going anywhere. I'm thinking he's coming after 50 grand with this
DEA wiping everyone out and Romero cleaning up the town once and for all. It's cleaning up everybody except for Chick. So that's my prediction. Right? I know I'm right. I know I'm right, Kenny.
No, I'm just smiling because I like to smile, dude.
All right. Thanks for joining us, guys. Thanks for checking us out on the show, and thanks for streaming us live. Listening to us and downloading us on iTunes. You can rate us on iTunes. We love fives, of course. We don't say it anymore, but we still love fives.
We do love fives.
Our YouTube commenters, we didn't give any shout-outs today, but we will give shout-outs next week. Thanks for your diligence and commenting. I'm sure we all want to hear from you guys as well.
Send us your predictions.
Right, yeah, it's a four shot right there. Kenny, are you?
I'm an arm wrestler. Yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
1 second arm wrestling. Are you guys ready? Here we go. For 1 second, was it $10,000 or $1,000?
$1,000. 1, 2, 3, go.
Oh! 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 No!
Maybe I jumped.
You might have jumped. No, I'm kidding.
I thought you meant go on three. He's like, 1, 2, 3, and then I go. He's like, go. I was like, oh, shit.
Where can the kids find you, Flippa?
I'm sorry. I've never seen anybody beat anybody that fast. That was deep.
That was worth it right there.
I'll take it.
That world champion?
Amateur world champion.
Amateur world champion. All right, you can find me on Twitter at Joe Flippo, JoeFlippo.
You can find me on the Twitters at DuaKCA, DuaKaissi.
Do you have any social media?
At the Kenny Johnson on Twitter?
Yeah. You can find me at Joe K. Braswell on Twitter and Instagram and at the hospital.
Oh, Instagram. Yeah. He's going back right now.
Put you back together.
But you're not going to tell anyone why.
Thanks for joining us, guys. We'll see you soon. Peace.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.